Hello, welcome to Killer. Glad you're here with us. I am your host, David, and here with me is my co-host, Craig. What's going on, dude?
Hey, good morning. Living the Mid-Ohio dream.
It is a lovely morning. That's right, man. We've got snow this week. It's like, I don't know, cold as balls outside. My feet are frozen right now. I don't know. We got all sorts of stuff going on in my house. At night, we turn the heat down to 55 degrees. It's balmy in here.
55 degrees? Are you running a meat locker there or what?
I may or may not have something in my basement. Well, upstairs always stays kind of warm. And then I've got a little one and he sleeps in my bed. So there's three of us in this bed, and my wife is obsessed with as many blankets as possible to be on the bed. So essentially, I don't know, it's super hot up there at night. So I turn it down, but when I come down here in the morning, my hands are like ice cold, and I can't turn the heat on because it's too loud and it'll pick up on the mic. So I'm over here and see my breath.
We're polar opposite here. Our heat stays when it gets cold and we turn the furnace on. The wife likes it toasty all the time, so I don't think we ever turn it down lower than 72. Between 72 and 74.
Holy cow,
is
dude.
The range for us.
Oh my god. Yeah, mine's always set to like at most 67. Wow. That's the high around here. Guess I'm abnormal. I don't know. We like it a little
chilly. I like it colder, actually. My basement stays naturally cold, you know, being obviously underground. But one of the reasons I like this house so much was when we bought it, just in the summertime, even without the air conditioning running, you could come down here and it was like really comfortable.
Yeah, that's my basement's pretty cozy in the summer, but I don't know. So we had some fun this last week and we did our IQ test, and we had some people doing their IQ test back with us, and you're the resident dumbass.
Yeah,
now.
Even at a 120, I'm the dumbass on this show, and I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around that, because even at 120, being that it's the low end of the very superior scale, just want to throw that in there. I'm still riding a struggle bus.
I wouldn't say you struggle. I think you're pretty smart, but yeah, it's something else, dude. I took that test. Well, I laugh about these things because my wife is really smart, I think, and she can't take tests. So if I had her take that IQ test, I guarantee you she would score like maybe average at best. But I promise you she's above average IQ. I think she's smarter than I am. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of funny, and we had a listener take hers, and she beat both of us. So I don't know. I guess maybe we should pass the torch to her and let her run the show.
At least be our business manager, right? Make sure we don't fuck things up.
Yep, I did want to say this though. So she sends us this message about taking this IQ test, and then she can't find the IQ results in her email because it went to her spam folder. So I'm not quite sure how valid these results are, and I'm kind of wondering if she photoshopped or doctored the results that she gave us. I don't know. Just throw that out there. Yeah. I'm kidding though. I'm just teasing. But yeah, it was pretty funny. Yeah, so if you want to compare IQs, we did this all in the spirit of the Toolbox Killers and Bittaker having a high IQ. Craig decided it'd be funny to go take that test, and he sent me his results, so I had to go take it, so it kind of started a thing. So if you want to do what we did and test your IQ, go ahead and head out to, I think it's IQtest.com, and then you take the test. It will, when you finish, it'll ask you to pay to get the results, but that's for like a full IQ test. You don't actually have to pay. The email that you sign up with at the beginning will get an email from the company with like your IQ from that, like, I don't know, 20, 30 question thing you do at, you know, at the beginning. And so you get your results in your email. So go get your results, take a screenshot, send them to us on Instagram or Twitter, at Killer Podcast on Instagram or at @Killer_podcast on Twitter. And let us know how you do, because I'm curious to see how smart our audience is. You know, I was going off of a ranking of the Cracker Barrel peg game, and you know, I think I'm like two pegs, right? Whatever,
yeah,
that one is.
Pretty smart.
Pretty smart.
Yeah. I always question the legitimacy of some of these tests that you find online. But this one seemed pretty legit. Like, the questions were formulated in a way that made you think, but I think the faster you could answer the questions correctly also factored into your scores. So there was, it wasn't just a, like a, it was kind of a true false thing, but they were also timing you. So there was a couple factors that weighed into the score. I think it was, for the most part, it was pretty legit.
Yeah, I thought so too. Like, you know, you take those things and you kind of question them, but the questions on the test I thought were pretty good. I don't know if they're, you know, valid for like a legit IQ test or not, but I thought they were interesting questions. And, you know, it fell into like my line of work almost, you know, in IT and doing development kind of stuff, where like a lot of the questions were phrased in a way that seemed very familiar to me when trying to solve development problems. So, you know, I felt like they're very good for like problem solving skills. And I took my sweet time answering my questions. And I did it during the day in between some stuff I was doing at work. And so, you know, I don't know. I think I finished in 15 minutes. I don't know how.
Yeah,
I think
10 to 11 minutes for me. I pushed it because, you know, Maybe that was a false sense of, hey, I'll get a higher score if I get done quicker. But obviously, if you're answering the questions wrong, that doesn't help.
The fastest one to answer incorrectly.
I was hoping it was multiple choice, because when I would do a test in school and I didn't study, I just always go with C. But that wasn't a choice on this test.
Well, if you pick C on this test, you did terrible.
No, it was a fun test. All right. I enjoyed the feedback we got from it for sure online.
Oh yeah, I did too. It was good. So yeah, go ahead and do the same. I'd be curious to see what other people get. I thought it was pretty fun. So my score, I don't think I said my score. It was 129. I think I was 1 point below genius level. And then our listener, she got what, 131 or something like that?
Yeah,
so
131.
Like 2 points higher than me. So she's a genius, I guess. So that's why she listens to us, because she's smart.
Then, like you said, you referenced the Toolbox episode, and I believe Lawrence Bittaker was a 138, so he was the Einstein of serial killers.
Yeah, that's right. So none of us can still take Bittaker. I always point that out. So can any of you take him down? Let's see. Give it a shot. Oh, yeah, I also wanted to mention this. So, you know, I was on a couple things with this. So this white van stuff, you know, I was telling you guys probably since the beginning of our first episode or whatever, or just not even just white van, but vans in general, the Astro van, the cargo van, you got to watch out for these things. They're creepy, and people in them are creepers, and I don't trust anybody who drives one. Well, so after I started this rampage on these white vans, I noticed that True Crime Garage is doing a rampage against white vans, and they've created a shirt about white vans. And I thought that was interesting. I don't know if they've said something before we did or not, but I thought that was kind of interesting. So I just want to be clear that we were not ripping that off. And I don't know if they're ripping us off or if it just happened at the same time coincidentally, because I thought that was quite strange. However, I do have a white van story I want to tell you about. So I'm driving down the highway and I'm cruising, you know, middle lane, doing about 65. On ramp comes up on the right hand side. Look over. There's this white van. Dude is hauling ass. I look over. He's wearing a surgical mask, wearing a white van. Shit you not. Straight up surgical mask, giant white rape van flying down the highway. That dude had a dead body in the back. I'm convinced there was a dead person
Holy
inside
cow.
That van.
Even though you were on the freeway, you have to risk your life to get that picture almost.
I would have, but I had my kid in the car. I have a no phone rule with the kid in the car.
That's a good rule
I don't
to follow.
In general, I don't really do my phone in the car unless I'm just switching maps or music. I won't touch my phone. I don't text and drive. It's not that important. Maybe if I stop at a stoplight or something and see, because, you know, a lot of times I have an Apple Watch, and so a lot of times I'll see the messages pop up or whatever. I usually just check to see who messaged me. Like, you like to text me all the time while I'm driving, but I never respond to you while I'm driving. So I'll see Craig sent me something. It's usually some GIF, some dude ringing a bell extremely aggressively or something. So I'll just kind of ignore it till later.
Yeah, nothing I send is that important.
No, and same for me. Anything I'm sending you is equally unimportant. So yeah, so... Anyway, I just thought that was interesting because it was right after, I don't know, a couple episodes ago when we were talking about this again. It actually might have been right after the Bittaker episode, you know, and so I thought that was kind of interesting. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on was I have these high and mighty folks who are, you know, they're all over my ass on Instagram. I posted a picture of some pork chops and Dude, vegans be hating. You know, I have some thoughts on that, and I think Craig had some thoughts as well. So he pieced together a nice bit of audio in response to these vegans and their hate of pork chops.
He got a little pretty mouth thing. You're going to do some praying for me, boy, and you better pray good.
I like to eat.
No, Biggie. I bet you squeal. I bet you squeal like Biggie. Oh, squeal. Squeal now. Squeal.
I like to eat.
Squeal, Lada. 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 Get down there, boy. Come on, squeal. Squeal.
I'm a human, and I'm coming.
So there you have it. That's what that's what we'd like to say back to the people who complain about eating pigs.
Yeah. As soon as I started reading the hate comments, that what for whatever reason that movie was the first thing to come to mind, and I had this idea in my head of how that would sound, and we threw a little bonus stuff in there on top of the banjo music, but.
Yeah, that was pretty complex. You got the banjo music, you got your Alex Jones sounders in there, you've got the Deliverance quotes in there. That was epic, dude. I enjoyed that.
The Alex Jones, there's so many connotations to that guy. Not that I'm advocating as a fan of the guy, but
I'm a fan of his sound bites.
I'm a fan of his sound bites, but as a human being, he is a pig. So it fits right in.
I would agree. Perfect. Yes. So anyway, I'd like to respond to these vegans. First of all, the vegans who don't bother me and don't complain that I eat meat, thank you. That's fine. I don't care if you don't eat meat, and I'm not going to bother you, and I'm not going to get on my high horse about it. Anyhow, this particular person made some assumptions, and I don't think they understand that I understand about animal cruelty and the way that factory farming is done, and that the way that people are treating animals is not good. And they tried to say that you can't like animals if you eat animals, essentially, and I find that to be completely untrue. And I find it highly ironic that you would listen to a podcast about humans being murdered, but care more about the fact that I ate a pork chop. So I don't know where your values align, but you are messed up, and I'll leave it at that. And I will continue to eat meat, and I tend to get my meat from local farmers where they are sustainable. They eat organic feed. They are out on pasture as much as possible and those kinds of things. I'm cognizant of those things, and I try to feed my family that way because I think it's healthier than the factory farmed stuff that goes through your local McDonald's. However, not all instances do I eat that way. I try to as much as possible, but I enjoy eating meat, and I will continue to do so. So screw you.
Touche. I agree. I don't understand. I understand everybody has ideals. But the worst possible thing that I hate the most is somebody that pushes those values on you. You have the right to do whatever you want, essentially. And then if you want to eat meat, eat meat. I'm not going to tell you you're an idiot because you're going out pulling grass out of your yard and that's all you want to eat. So,
well, I mean, the super ironic part about all of this is, first of all, we are omnivores by design. Second of all, eating only vegetables, those people are some of the most unhealthy looking people I have ever seen in my entire life. They have next to no muscle mass on their body. They look gaunt. They look malnourished. They look usually pretty gross, honestly. And, you know, if you're doing veganism as like a health reason or something like that, because for whatever reason, things just weren't going your way, chances are you were probably eating just too much processed food. That's really what it is. And stop eating processed food and you will feel much better. End of story. But you know, most people go on and whatever. Anyway, this is a true crime podcast. I'm not going to get into the health stuff too much. I do enjoy it, but I say, let's get into this week's case. Yeah, what do you
think? I agree. Time to get down to business. You are listening to Killer. This is case number 11, the Cleveland Strangler.
Lock your doors, bolt your windows, and turn off the lights. We're about to begin.
What happened in this house behind me is simply a nightmare, and there are a lot of deeply disturbing questions for authorities here. There were six bodies found in this house last week. This morning, we know there are more.
We discovered four additional, what we believe to be, four bodies.
Police believe that they were murdered by this man, Anthony Sowell, a convicted rapist who had been living in the house.
It appears that this man had a satiable appetite that he had to fill.
Five of the bodies have been identified as women. Police say they were strangled.
I didn't feel safe. There's something telling me, don't go in this house.
One woman says she narrowly avoided being a victim.
How he was in love with me, how he wanted me to go up to his house and drink with him.
Sowell was a registered sex offender, and this tragedy raises questions about how closely he had been monitored by police.
Probation and parole is not really set up to be a law enforcement outfit. They're not set up to do the type of surveillance and supervision that might catch somebody like this guy.
The search of this house will continue. Chris, there could be still more bodies here.
Pierre, thank you. Thank you for the reporting.
Police in Cleveland, Ohio released new details today in a grisly murder case. At least 11 victims have now been found inside the home of a man convicted of attempted rape, a registered sex offender. Police say some of the corpses may have been there since 2005. Across the country, there are almost 700,000 registered sex offenders required to tell authorities where they live. In our closer look tonight, ABC's Pierre Thomas reports that tracking all of them is overwhelming. It's a virtually impossible job.
The question on everyone's mind in Cleveland today, how did a registered sex offender amass bodies in his home without anyone knowing?
28 years of being on this bench. This is, without question, the most serious set of allegations that I've ever faced.
And people are mad. And they're mad about this. I don't blame them. And I'm mad, too.
The evidence suggests Anthony Sowell exploited a broken system. For starters, authorities failed to enlist the community's help to be on the lookout for signs of trouble. Sowell was a registered sex offender, but the law did not require authorities to knock on doors and notify his neighbors.
No one even knew about him being a predator. All right, that was the system dropped the ball on that.
Across the country, a similar story.
The system that we have to do monitoring, supervision, follow-up once they return to the community is just overwhelmed.
In the Cleveland case, the county where Anthony Sowell lived is home to 3,400 other sex offenders, and there are just 8 officers to track them. And then there's the law. Sowell was required to check in with authorities every 90 days, and he did. Sheriff's deputies can make unannounced visits to his home to make sure he was still living there, which they did in September, but they could not go in.
We are not obligated or actually allowed under law to enter the offender's residence.
The fact is, sex offenders have constitutional protections like everyone else.
The same rights as you and I have, rights to privacy.
Last December, Sowell was accused of trying to rape a woman at his house. He was arrested, but his victim later dropped the charges. The sheriff's sex offender unit says they were never informed of the arrest. Soul was left on the street. More and more women were disappearing. And as all too often the case, authorities never suspected a thing. Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Cleveland.
This Cleveland story is prompting some strong reactions. You can weigh in on sex offender laws by going to our blog, The World Newser, at abcnews.com.
Yes! Finally, finally.
Justice.
Your reaction?
I am just so pleased with the verdict right now. Very happy.
A celebration in the hallway as the families of the victims react to the verdict.
Justice has been served. All the families happy. It's over. What is
your- Wednesday, a jury recommended the death penalty for convicted serial killer Anthony Sowell.
We therefore unanimously find that the sentence of death should be imposed upon the defendant, Anthony Sowell.
We get closure, finally.
Closure for the only surviving victim, Vanessa Gay.
Vanessa, your reaction to today's verdict?
I support the jury's decision, and I'm thankful that he'll never hurt another woman again.
Gay was the only woman that Sowell allowed to leave.
He victimized women all through his life, and he's not going to be able to do that again.
Ray's Sausage, a small sausage and cheese shop on the east side of Cleveland, Ohio, was blamed for the foul stench in the neighborhood. They replaced their grease traps and even their sewer line, but the foul odor still remained. On multiple occasions, Councilman Zach Reed called the health department and alerted them of the foul smell plaguing the area. While there were many complaints, they fell on deaf ears.
The area where Ray's is located is in a neighborhood in East Cleveland called Mount Pleasant, located on the corner of Imperial Avenue and East 123rd Street. This area of Cleveland is a bit run down from what it once used to be. However, there are homes and apartments, corner drugstores, and churches lined up for blocks. Mount Pleasant is just your average Cleveland suburb.
On September 22, 2009, sheriff's deputies arrive at 12205 Imperial Avenue in Cleveland, Ohio. The officers are there to do a check into Anthony Sowell, a reported sex offender, who, due to the passing of the Adam Walsh Act, must check into the sheriff's office every 90 days. The officers are just validating his address and making sure that he's registered properly, and they do not enter his home. A few hours later, Sowell persuades Latundra Billups to come to his house to drink malt liquor with him. Sowell became angry and choked her with an extension cord and raped her until she passed out. She was able to leave by promising Sowell to bring him $50 and to not tell police about the incident.
We're going to go back in time and talk about the history of Anthony Sowell. Sowell was born August 19, 1959. He was raised in East Cleveland and one of seven children. He was a son of a single mother, Claudia Gertrude Garrison. Seven other children moved in with them, all belonging to Sowell's sister. They moved in after the death of their chronically ill mother. Sowell's niece alleges that Garrison abused him physically. She states that in one incident, she was forced to strip naked in front of the other kids and was whipped with an electrical cord until she bled. Sowell began raping his niece on almost a daily basis at the age of 11.
Sowell eventually entered military service in the Marine Corps on January 24, 1978, when he was 18. He was trained as an electrician at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. On July 13, 1978, he was assigned to the 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing at the Marine Corps Air Station, Cherry Point, in North Carolina. In 1980, he spent a year overseas. He returned to Cherry Point after that and then was assigned to Camp Butler in Okinawa, Japan on January 20, 1984. A year later, he transferred to the Camp Pendleton in California for 3 days until he was discharged honorably on January 18, 1985. Corporal Sowell received a Good Conduct Medal with one service star, a Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, a Certificate of Commendation, a Meritus Mast, and two letters of appreciation. Just prior to Sowell joining the military, he had impregnated his high school girlfriend. He would occasionally visit her when he could, and his child. He also married a woman he met while stationed in Okinawa, Japan, but the marriage would ultimately end in divorce. Sowell has a strange upbringing. He doesn't really have a father figure in his life. They all live with his mother. She's obviously, by the account of the niece, she's very abusive. And one of Sowell's siblings gets chronically ill, and so her seven kids then move in. So there's like 14 kids in this house. And, you know, Sowell's mom abuses some of them, whips them with extension cords, forces them to strip naked, like do all these weird things, like this extra aggressive stuff. And, you know, Sowell's there witnessing this growing up. And I think he kind of starts to form this distrust of women early on in his life.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Can you imagine the trauma that a kid that's 10, 11 years old goes through in their head when they see, you know, their nieces and nephews and other siblings being stripped naked and beaten with a cord? That in its own right, right there, would leave a lasting scar, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then, you know, eventually Sowell starts molesting and raping his niece, which is gross on many levels. And you know, I think it was stated as well that he had a, I don't know if it was his brother or one of his other, his sibling, or, his cousins or whatever, named Junior, also began raping the same niece. So this poor girl, man, she had it rough.
I can't imagine the chaos in a household with, he's one of seven children, and it didn't really say how many children were still in the house, but then there's seven additional kids that move into the house. So if they all lived at the same residence at one time, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. And, you know, so you can see, like, there's this just history of abuse and violence from his mother at an early age. And, you know, I think that ends up ultimately shaping Sowell. And, you know, it starts to kind of formulate, you know, how he treats and views, you know, women going forward.
I completely agree. I don't know if it scared him, I'm sure, watching his mother do that to other people. But then, you know, flip the switch over to raping his niece, then, you know, not only does he not have respect for, you know, women in general, he could be fearful of them. He's doing things to show them that he's dominant in this case, and then it escalates from that point. Sickening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I recall reading something or hearing, it might have actually been his testimony when he was talking during his trial, and he says that he joined the military to spite his mom. You know, he didn't like her, and he joined the military to serve just in spite of her. And you know, I thought that was pretty interesting and kind of telling of the way that he felt about her and women in general. Was, you know, he was always like angry towards her, it seemed like. And I think that manifests itself in many ways throughout his life.
Yeah, I'm sure he was subject to the same abuse from her. I mean, if she's clearly stripping other kids down in front of all of them and doing that, I'm sure they all took their turns. So I'm sure that hate manifested, you know, from that simple act, humiliating him and then abusing him and beating him in front of the other kids. I can see where the hate's coming from.
Yeah, definitely.
In 1989, Sowell and a woman, Melvette Sockwell, went to Sowell's house. Sockwell and Sowell hung out for a period of time, but when she decided she wanted to leave, he became abusive and aggressive. He bound her hands and feet with a tie and a belt, then gagged her with a rag. She eventually told police, "He choked me real hard because my body started tingling. I thought I was going to die." Sowell was charged with kidnapping, rape, and attempted rape. Sockwell was 3 months pregnant at the time. Sowell ended up spending 15 years in prison and was released in 2005. This was a crime that caused him to have to check in with police every 90 days following the passing of the Adam Walsh Act.
When Sowell was released from prison, he moved back in with his stepmother on 12205 Imperial Avenue in Cleveland. It was a three-story duplex situated amongst several abandoned businesses, boarded-up homes, and in the center of an area where drug abuse and crime was rampant. The house was cheap, and in 2007, his stepmother became ill and was hospitalized, so he stayed there. Sowell found work in a factory up until he was laid off, also in 2007. At that time, he began selling scrap metal and recycling. During his time after prison, Sowell would frequent a sex site called alt.com, where he'd look for sex partners. He described himself as a master looking for submissives. There was a foul stench that was reported in the area, and it continued to linger on.
In December of 2008, a woman waved down police on Kinsman Road in East 116th. She was covered in blood. Gladys Wade told officers that Anthony Sowell had invited her in for beer, and when she declined, he attacked her. She was dragged upstairs and strangled so hard she passed out. When she awoke, Sowell was on top of her trying to rape her. When she got free and tried to get help at a nearby restaurant, she was turned away and told to use the payphone outside. Sowell caught up to her and told neighbors she was trying to rob his house and went back home. Police sent her in an ambulance to the hospital where she received stitches for an injury to her thumb due to broken glass.
Tracks in the snow in front of Sowell's house suggested a struggle occurred. There was also a bloody tissue nearby and blood on the steps. Sowell was detained. Detective Georgia Hussein later told Wade that it was going to be a case of her word against his, and that for all anyone knew, it could have been that she was the aggressor. Sowell was released 2 days later, and no search of his residence took place. Cleveland police would later refute the story and offer a slightly different account. They said the victim would not cooperate with police when she agreed to speak with them, she failed to show up for an interview with Lieutenant Thomas Stacho, and that Hussein presented the case to the prosecutor, who decided they didn't have enough evidence to charge Sowell. The interesting thing in these cases, it seems, is like this area, like it just seems, you know, from the very beginning when we talked about, you know, Ray's sausage and there's this strange odor in the area and stuff, like, and then it just keeps lingering on and there's weird stuff going on and no one really seems to do much of anything around here, it seems, just based on some of the story so far and things that I know and have researched, you know, around it. Like, you know, the police, well, even like the woman who escapes, and she goes in that restaurant and she's trying to get help and they tell her to go use the payphone outside. Like, what the hell? I don't get it.
Yeah, when she's clearly visibly been attacked and assaulted and she's bloody and beaten up and they tell her to go outside and use the payphone. I don't get that at all. Why wouldn't they have...
Well, I think we're putting it through our filter, like put it through the filter of that area. If you and I have been up that way, like this probably is like so common. Like think of all the strung out people that are probably walking around the streets and do really strange things and come into these businesses and say weird things. And you're like, dude, just get out. I don't need this right now. Get out of here. You're scaring my customers. Like just go, please leave. You know, I once managed a Subway. And there would be strange people that would come in and they would do stuff like this all the time. And you would know they were up to no good. And especially people who would come in and try and quick change you and stuff. And we'd kick people out all the time for doing stuff like this. Just being weird, strange behavior. And that was in, you know, a pretty affluent area mostly. And so, you know, I personally think that these people in this area probably deal with it a lot more than, you know, when we read it on the outside as, you know, white upper middle class people who are in our suburban neighborhoods where we feel pretty safe overall. You know, like you gotta think, put it through the filter of like a rundown drug and crime ridden area and then kind of think of it that way.
Yeah, that's a good point because you know, we talked a little bit about New Orleans in our last episode and you make a good point. Can you imagine some of the people that just kind of linger in and out of businesses down there on a regular basis and are just like, you know, just get the hell out of here. I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to make money. You know, I'm trying not to scare my customers away. So yeah, that's a really good point. And I didn't think about that. Yeah. And this area of Cleveland is, it's less than desirable for sure.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, it's run down and, you know, it's not a great area to be in. And, you know, it used to at one point in time be a thriving area. That's why there's all these houses and stuff built there. And, you know, it was right near all the factories and the steel mills and all that stuff. But now that stuff's come and gone. And, you know, you've got these rundown neighborhoods, boarded up buildings and businesses. And, you know, it's an area that's definitely not thriving. Let's put it that way.
Right. So I got to know, since you managed a Subway, what's the most notorious customer or just vagrant that came into the store that you had to kick out? I got to hear that quick story.
Okay. So I have two instances. One was an employee and one was a customer. So I typically didn't have too many problems with the customers overall. Like I didn't have to personally really kick anybody out or do anything like that. However, I was there. I had a manager I worked with, another manager, who he was very confrontational and people for whatever reason would just get under his skin. And he was a very like quiet, reserved kind of guy. And so like when he was just doing his thing, you know, he always had that look of, what do they call it? Resting bitch face. So people always took him as very angry and he was a little angry, but normally he was just kind of quiet. And so he was talking to a regular who had come into the store all the time. And, he was really chatty and it was a female and, you know, he just knew her and he was just being nice with her, I think. And she left. And then this guy comes in and he orders a bunch of sandwiches. And, you know, there's like a process to the way that you order sandwiches that can be really annoying. And this guy, of course, comes in and starts doing that. And so this manager he has this look on his face. And then the customer starts flipping out on him. He's like, what? Because I'm not a girl. You're just going to be a jerk to me. And then they start getting into it and start screaming at each other. Like, it escalates very quickly. And so he told the manager, said, "All right, dude, get out of here. Like, I'm done with you. Get out of here. You're disrupting the customers. Leave." And the guy starts screaming. They're screaming back and forth at each other. And so the customer goes to leave. And when he opens the door and he goes to slam the door shut, but it's one of those doors with the air compressor, or the air press, you know, like hinges. And he goes to slam it as hard as he can. And the door just like goes, then like slowly, very, very slowly shuts. So I just remember that because this guy was so mad and he tries to slam our door and it just doesn't even come close to slamming. It just closes like completely gently and as slow as possible. I just always laughed about that. But that was one occasion. We did kick out a few people who would try and quick change us. That would happen on occasion. Like as soon as they start this thing where they start, for people who don't know, quick changing is when you get to the register and then you start like trying to exchange bills for different change. And like the people try and confuse you so that you end up giving them more money than they gave you at the beginning. And so they'll come in and they'll, you know, they'll have like a 20 and they'll be like, okay, they'll pay for their like $5 sandwich and you get 15. Like, oh, can I get 5 ones back? Yeah, yeah. And then as you're doing the 5 ones and you're counting, then they go, oh, can you give me two tens back for this five? And then you end up exchanging a bunch of numbers so fast that it can confuse the person at the register. As soon as someone starts trying to exchange bills multiple times with you, you just stop them right there and go, no, I can't do that. And then you just kick them out. So that would happen. And then the other one was an employee who was stealing from the shop. And I had family who ran this business. So I had a vested interest in this place, you know. So I, you know, I always was watching these people. And this dude would, like, take, like, 3-foot-long sandwiches home all the time and then, like, load up on, like, all this. You were supposed to get a 6-inch sub for every 4 hours that you worked. And it was a normal sub. Like, but, you know, we'd be a little lenient. Like, if you put a little extra on, no one's going to pay attention to that. But this dude was, like, taking, like, party subs home and, like, just being extra ridiculous with the amount of food he was taking. And he was also a poor employee and would show up late all the time. Anyway, this dude sucked. And so, you know, I told our owner and they fired him. And then when he got fired, he started calling the store and harassing me and like threatening to come kick my ass and threatening to come kill me and do all this stuff. And he was pretty aggressive about it. He was not happy that he got fired. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, fun times.
I can't relate. I've never been in that type of position or had that type of job. So I was just curious.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, you meet a lot of strange people. We had a lot of weirdo customers. I had this trucker who would come in all the time and he was pretty cool, but he always liked to talk shit to me. And so we were teasing each other and he told me the best part of me ran down my mom's leg. Yeah. So anyway,
he never told you that you had a real pretty mouth, did you? Oh, that's good.
I don't think so. Yeah. So yeah, that dude was pretty interesting. You meet nice. Some people. Let me tell you what.
Okay. Well, let's get back to business. I had to know if there was any, you know, good stories about being a store manager. So.
Always. Oh, yes. I'm sure there's more. I'm just not thinking of them right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's fast forward to September 24th, 2009. 2 days after the attack on LaTundra Billups, the case is assigned to a sex crime detective who is having trouble reaching her. On October 11th, she fails to show up for an interview with detectives. On October 20th, a call to 911 reports a naked woman falling or being thrown from a second-story window of Sol's house. Sol tells responders that she fell out of the window because she had been on drugs and it was an accident. EMS takes the woman to the local hospital and they call the police. When the woman is interviewed by police, she refuses to cooperate.
On October 27th, 2009, LaTundra Billups meets with the sex crimes detective assigned to her case. A day after the meeting, a search warrant is issued for Sol and a search warrant for his home is issued as well. On October 29th, police go to Sol's house to arrest him, but he's not home. They enter the house and find 2 decomposing bodies. The following day, police return to search the home and discover 3 more bodies, 2 in a crawl space in the house and 1 buried in the basement's dirt floor. On Halloween 2009, Anthony Sol is arrested walking down Mount Auburn Avenue about a mile from his home. On November 3rd, Sol is charged with 5 counts of aggravated murder. Also on November 3rd, police discover 6 more bodies buried in his backyard.
Okay, so before we get into the details of the Sol investigation, let's discuss the women and timeline of events after the investigators uncovered the bodies of 11 black women in Sol's home. May 2007, Crystal Dozier, age 35, is strangled by Sol. She was the mother of 7 children. She went missing in May 2007. June 29th, 2007. A woman who lives across the street from Soul calls to complain of a smell of a foul odor in the neighborhood, which she smells like a dead person or animal. June 2008, Tashauna Culver is strangled and killed. August 2008, LaShonda Long is killed at Soul's house. October 2008, Michelle Mason is murdered by Soul. November 10th, 2008, Tanya Carmichael, last seen by her mother, is reported by her mom to have had a drug problem occasionally and appears and disappears for 3 to 5 days at a time. However, it has been 3 weeks since she was last seen. December 8, 2008, the bloody woman we discussed earlier flags down police. February 10, 2009, Warrensville Heights police check several houses between East 120th near Kinsman Road and Oakfield Avenue, where the woman from the December 8th assault flagged down police looking for Carmichael, but no one recognizes her. April 2009, Nancy Cobbs, a local construction worker who also has a drug problem, goes missing. Imelda Hunter is murdered by Soul. June 2009, Talaysia Fortson, she went missing in June, but wasn't reported until her mother heard about the Soul case in November. Janice Webb, and also Kim Yvette Smith. September 22nd, 2009, the woman Soul attacks leading to his arrest is assaulted.
So let's recap the timeline of events after the report on September 22nd, 2009. So on October 29th, 2009, the two bodies are discovered. The next day on the 30th, three more bodies are discovered. On the 31st, Soul's arrested. Then on November 3rd, prosecutors charge Soul with 5 counts of murder, and police find 6 more victims. Then on November 4th, the Cuyahoga County coroner announces all 11 victims are black women. At least 8 had been strangled. Tanya Carmichael's body is identified. On November 5th, police identify a second and third victim, Talaysia Fortson and Tashauna Culver, both strangled. November 6th, East Cleveland police reopen the investigation into the strangulations of Garner and Thomas and the killing of Prater. Police identify Nancy Cobbs. On November 7th, police identify Michelle Mason, Crystal Dozier, and Imelda Hunter. On November 9th, Janice Webb is identified. On November 11th, LaShonda Long is identified. So what's strange about this case is there's not like a ton of information like leading up to these murders. And, you know, it's mostly just, you know, this report that there's this nasty stench in the air in the area and like nobody is investigating. And that Ray's Sausage place is literally right next door to Soul's residence. Ray's Sausage is on the corner, and then Soul's is right next door. And the Sausage place replaces a sewer drain and various other things because they just don't know. You know, everyone's blaming the Sausage place on this smell. But it turns out that in Soul's house, there are just dead bodies everywhere. And that's why it smells horrible in the neighborhood. Gee, go figure. And, you know, the theme with most of these women is that they are reported, like, way late. They all have drug problems. They're all black. They all live in the inner city. And, well, I guess not the inner city. It's kind of a suburb of the city. But, you know, in this rundown neighborhood that has drug problems and crime, and it's mostly, you know, lower class and nobody cares. Like, nobody's really following up. You know, Cleveland police don't seem to have a great track record when it comes to investigating some of these events. You know, they get reported and they kind of do the bare minimum, but then they find out these women are on drugs or whatever, and they're just like, eh, you know, they probably just left or OD'd somewhere. Like, who cares? That's kind of their stance. They're not going to officially say that, but from reading everything that happened around this case, that's basically my conclusion, is that Cleveland police just don't really care if you have a drug problem and you're in the lower income areas. So, I don't know. What do you think about that?
That's exactly how I read into it as well. And I don't know if there's any law enforcement individuals out there that listen to our show. I mean, it's possible, but it seems like a running theme where depending on your, I don't know what the correct term is, social status or, you know, where you live or what issues you might have, the police kind of turn a blind eye in a lot of these cases. And it seems like a running theme from several of these cases that we've done so far, you know, and it's kind of too bad because I get up on my soapbox here a little bit, but I mean, everybody has, you know, the right to live their life and, you know, whether it's good or bad, the things that they do, no one deserves to be strangled, raped, and killed, obviously. And so many of these cases we talk about where it, had law enforcement acted a little bit sooner, there would have been a lot less victims. Just like the Willie Picton case, that the first time he was brought into, you know, the police department questioned, I think there was a 2-year gap of time where they didn't arrest him officially and get him charged and, you know, start finding evidence at the farm. This is the same thing. They smell these horrible smells coming from this neighborhood, you know, obviously blame it on the sausage place because they're making meat product or whatever. And I'm sure there is pretty interesting smells that come from that place, but a dead body is a pretty distinct smell.
No kidding. Yeah. And, you know, even early on, you had a city councilman, you know, Zach Reed, and he reports that there's this just nasty stench in the area. And I think his mom lived like somewhere near the area or something like that. And that's why he was always around there. And, you know, he's reporting that there's like this just nasty stench everywhere. And, you know, then you've got Sowell over here has dead bodies living in his house. I mean, he's living amongst these dead women. And I don't think we really touched on it much yet, but, you know, Sowell himself, I believe, has a drug problem at this point. I think he's a crack addict and he drinks a lot of malt liquor. That's kind of his beverage of choice. And, you know, so he's not in the right state of mind. And then I think you bring into focus the abuse that he suffered as a child and his hatred of women. And then it kind of led him down this path. And from every case that I read about each of these women, almost all of them were lured to his home on the promise of drugs or alcohol. And that's how he was getting them. You know, they were all drug addicts, you know, and he was taking them back to his place and then murdering them. And, you know, I'm pretty sure during his testimony, he says, you know, like he just didn't like women. Like, you know, his mom just pretty much jaded his life, apparently, the way that she treated him and his siblings and his nieces and nephews, their cousins, I mean.
Let's just talk about that, though, for a minute. There's 11 victims, and some of the articles that I was reading through, I like to read through articles while I'm looking for audio for trailers and things like that too, to try to find some of those good videos to pull clips from. But let's say victim one and two are already dead. They're in the house. What are these other victims thinking when they come there and smell this dude's place? Are they so wasted that they cannot smell the dead corpses in this guy's house? Because I don't think he was going out of his way a little bit to hide the bodies, you know, within the house, but that smell, and I've said it before, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a large animal or a human body, that smell after 3 or 4 days is distinct, and it's just wretched. And I want to know what these women are thinking when they're coming to this dude's house to hang out. Like, Jesus Christ, is this guy just the worst housekeeper ever? Or what's the deal? Because I know if I went to somebody's house and smelled that smell when they opened up the front door, I'd be doing a 180 and be out of that place.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if their drug problems were so bad that they just didn't care or what. I mean, drug addicts are notoriously not the cleanest of people. So, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think they're rotting dead body dirty, but, you know, they're not very clean. So I don't know. I don't know what's normal, why that seemed okay. I wondered that myself. That's a great question. You know, how many of these women showed up at this place and were like, whoa, this stinks here. Or they all just lived in the neighborhood and it smelled so bad they were all used
to it.
Man,
oh man, that's just crazy.
Right. It's disgusting on several levels. And, you know, I just... Ugh, it just like gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about
it. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't care how messed up you are. Generally speaking, when you're going to somebody's place to get, you know, hooked up with some drugs or whatever, for the most part, you may be, you know, coming down off a high or, you know, in between, you know, getting your fix. So you think your sensory organs are still working normally at that point. Just the smell of a dead body hitting you in the face. And what about the sausage place? That place, they're just trying to run a legit business and they got people blaming them for the stink. So can't imagine things were going real well for them when there were 6 rotting corpses in the backyard behind their building.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, you know, like I think he was able to blame the sausage place for this. Like it was like the perfect storm. He lived right next door to this sausage company that was like making sausages next door. It's like, yeah, that place just stinks. It's not my house. You know what I mean? So like you could easily just like when someone comes over, go, yeah, sorry for the smell. It's not my house. It's not the, you know, 6 rotting bodies in my house. It's the sausage place next door. So I don't know. He must have had a good excuse. There was also a video in the alleyway between his house and that sausage place of that woman when she fell out of the window and he comes out naked. and he's like chasing after her. And it was really strange. But yeah, there was like surveillance video of that event unfolding. And, you know, she falls out the window, and then he just takes her back in the house. And he's butt-ass naked outside in this alleyway walking around. It was really bizarre. And, you know, there were several different times where, you know, like these women would escape, and then he would come and be like, hey, no, this chick's got a drug problem. You know, she's crazy or whatever. People are just like, eh, whatever, you know. It just happened to be that weird perfect storm of low income, police don't care, next to the sausage factory that we can blame for the smell. Like, I wonder if this sausage place didn't exist. Like, do people actually take this seriously and investigate it?
I have no idea.
I'm going to guess no. I'm just going to guess no. I don't think Cleveland police have the best track record, at least in these low income areas, for investigating these things.
To Soul's advantage, the sausage place was right there, because I looked at the map and the storefront faced one street, and it was kind of, to me, it looked like it was kind of on the corner, and then you round the corner, and then the first house on the next street was Anthony Soul's house. So he literally, his house, yeah, yep, his house Imperial literally Avenue. Set, you know, behind the storefront. So
yeah, exactly. It was right behind it, and it was just like the perfect location to blame this on. Like, it just worked out perfectly for him, you know, for that period of time, although he's extremely sloppy, and that's why he ends up getting caught. But that it was just like that right amount of things in that area for this to happen. And I don't think you have, but have you listened to the latest season of Serial, the
yet.
Podcast? Okay, so they did a whole season on the justice system in Cleveland, which was quite fascinating. And let's just say that the justice system in the Cleveland area is not very good. And we say we have the best justice system in the world, and there's a lot to be desired. So Cleveland police just don't seem to have a great track record for being on the up and up with this stuff. And I just don't, after listening to that and reading some of this and some other things that I've heard about and just living in the area, I don't believe that they do their best job when it comes to these kinds of cases on purpose. They just treat them as one-off, whatever, who cares? It's a low-life loser in a low-income area, and we don't care. That's the vibe I get. And if you're a Cleveland police officer listening to this and you're not one of those people, then I'm not talking about you, because for every, you know, good bunch of apples, there's always a rotten one. So let's be clear, this isn't a dig on law enforcement as a whole, just the bad ones. And I just know that there in Cleveland, there is a propensity for these people to kind of sweep this kind of stuff under the rug or kind of push it aside.
I have a feeling that that's, you know, that's duplicated in other big cities as well.
I would agree. And I would also say we usually only hear the bad cases where things were botched and things are missed. No one really goes around and overtly praises the police for every time they do their job, but you'll hear about it when they don't. And I think that, you know, so there's in general, as a whole, negative things tend to get more coverage, because I don't know why, but people are drawn to the negative more than the positive. And so it'd be boring if every day in the news we heard like the 19 stories of how they did their job. You know, people be like, okay, cool.
Big deal.
That's why you
don't
hear
about it. It's boring.
People
don't want to hear that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at here is, you know, from the things I read in here, it's all negative, but that's because that's the stuff that gets reported and you don't hear all of the positive. So again, I reiterate, this isn't a dig on all law enforcement, just the bad ones and when it happens and we know about it. So don't think that we don't realize that as a show. You know, I definitely support law enforcement, and, you know, and I hope everyone else listening does too. I know that they do some weird things and there's some weird conduct and, you know, protectionist activities that happen when bad things do happen, and I don't agree with those things. However, there are a lot of really good police officers who do their job and do it well, and, you know, those people need to be commended for that. So anyway,
okay,
let's move on.
Yep. Now we're going to talk about the charges that were brought up against Soul and some of the proceedings. Soul was charged with 11 counts of aggravated murder, 74 counts of rape, kidnapping, tampering with evidence, and abuse of a corpse. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity, but later changed his plea to not guilty. He was convicted on July 22, 2011, on all but two counts against him, including the 11 murder charges. On August 10, 2011, jurors recommended a death penalty for Soul. On August 12, Judge Dick Ambrose upheld the jury's recommended sentence. Soul has been on death row since September 14, 2011.
Soule's execution was set for October 29, 2012, but in March of 2012, a motion for stay of execution was filed, and the motion granted in April. Soule's death penalty was appealed by his defense team in October of 2012. The biggest points of the appeal are that Soule did not receive a fair trial because of the extensive media coverage. The media attention was overwhelming, generating thousands of news stories, and local coverage was both frenzied and sustained. The courtroom had been closed to the public during an evidentiary hearing and while a jury was picked, and that he received lousy legal representation. Soule's trial attorneys should have had their client plead guilty to the killing of the women and then focus their efforts on preventing Soule from getting the death penalty. It was later determined by the Ohio Supreme Court that that Soule's Sixth Amendment rights were violated. The following is the Sixth Amendment for those not familiar. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed by the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
On December 8, 2016, the Ohio Supreme Court rejected an appeal from Anthony Soule, affirming his convictions and death sentence. In May 2017, Soule appealed his case to the U.S. Supreme Court, but in October they denied it. In February of 2018, the Ohio Supreme Court denied a request by Soule to reopen his appeal.
Yeah, and, you know, like this court case stuff, again, I think this, we talked about this a little bit last week, it gets a little confusing because of all of the different things that go on in the legal system, and, you know, I'm not a legal expert. So what ended up happening was it seemed like, you know, they file their appeals, start the appeals process, and then the court said, yeah, you were right. The Sixth Amendment right was violated, but we don't feel that that mattered. Like, that didn't change the outcome of this trial. And also, Soule doesn't contest that he's not guilty. Like, he ended up admitting to it in so many words. And so, therefore, we're going to continue on with what we've already done, and we're not going to put this back in trial again. And so, you know, that's kind of interesting in its own right, and it's a good thing. You know, obviously, you know, we don't want to have Soule out on the streets. We don't want to have him retried because obviously, like, this happened. It was all in his house. Like, this is kind of an open and shut case, kind of like the Picton case was. Once they started uncovering the evidence, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, clearly, like, this is happening. And so, you know, here we are, 7 years later after he was arrested. Well, actually, I'm sorry, 7 years after he was on trial, and, you know, he's still alive. So, what'd you think about him as a person when you were watching some of these videos? And I'm assuming you listened to some of the court audio of him confessing and stuff. What'd you think about him?
I did. I wanted to incorporate some of the actual hearing footage into the trailer, but the audio was terrible because, you know, I don't know why courthouse audio has to be so terrible in general. But to me, every time I've seen the guy on an interview or they show something about him on the news, he appears to be a clean cut dude. And he doesn't have that, to me, I'm not a psychologist, obviously, but he doesn't have that crazy, sick, demented, twisted look in his eye that you know, that you obviously can see with some of these other people. You know, there's not a distinguishing factor. If you saw the dude walking down the street, he would just look like a normal guy in Cleveland. You know, there's nothing about his appearance or his demeanor that I saw that would trigger anything else other than, hey, it's just a guy walking down the street, right?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I was listening to him, his testimony, and he's just like, he just seems like a chill, just normal dude, like someone you could just hang out with. He seems super approachable and nice almost, which I know that's weird to say. I mean, he murdered 11 people. Like, that's disgusting, and he's despicable, but he just seemed so approachable, like way different than like the Toolbox Killers. Those dudes just seemed like they were psychos, and Soule seemed so just relatable. It was weird. I don't know, like, I'm watching him give his testimony and I almost feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. I had that kind of that feeling as well. I mean, obviously in the back of your mind, we know what he did and what happened and what the outcome was. But in discussion back and forth with you before we got to the point where you wrote the narrative and things, I think you had mentioned that he was actually a cook for the Cleveland Indians at the ballpark at one point. And then the trailer audio, just to give a little context of that weird laughter and soundbite at the beginning, you see this guy in court who appears to be a normal, everyday, approachable person. And then that sound came from a 45-second home video that was, you know, taken into evidence from Soule's home where it almost looked like a selfie. And for 45 seconds, you see this like strobe light flashing, and you see this dude dressed up as an Easter bunny. And then he obviously laid in the audio for this weird, demented laughter. Come to find out, I read a little bit into the context of that video. He had dressed up as the Easter Bunny for a kids' event at a church in Cleveland. I don't remember the date and time or the actual church, but that's where it came from. So he's taking footage of when he dressed up as the Easter Bunny, laying in this sick, twisted laughter and strobe lights and shit. It's like, to me, it's something you would see when you were tripping. Honestly, not that I've ever went the tripping route, but you know, to me, that's what I'd imagine it would be like, sitting in a couch hanging out, and all of a sudden you freak out and you see the Easter Bunny and then this real deep laughter.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's like what was that show, Wilfred or whatever? That dude would see his dog and his dog was like real, but it was like a dude dressed up in the dog costume.
Yeah, oh my was. God, that show. I don't weird. Appreciate the fact that you reminded me that that ever was a show. I had forgotten all about it.
Of all the TV shows I don't watch that are good, I ended up watching like several episodes of that show for some reason. And it's like, I don't know, it captivated me in some strange way. And, you know, I don't watch very much TV, and I tend to like rewatch things that I like a lot instead of watching new stuff. But that show, for some reason, I've watched way too much.
I think it's just so fucking weird. You have to see what the whole story is about. Like, why is this even a thing? And you got to investigate it a little bit.
Yeah, it's just so strange. Anyway, was it like Elijah Wood was in it or something? He's like the main guy.
Right. It was so weird.
The whole show was just weird. Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, it was it was fascinating. I haven't watched that video. You sent it to me last night, and I didn't get a chance to check it out yet, but I definitely will. And I don't know, maybe we'll post a link to it on our webpage in the blog section. I don't do a great job of keeping up our website up to date. I do try and keep the episodes posted up to date, but I don't really go into the blog too often. Just other things going on. So that being said, stomach growls are epic. I purposely didn't eat breakfast today so that I would get some good stomach growl audio for you, but that hasn't happened yet. And by breakfast, that's breakfast at 4:30 in the morning, not breakfast at like 7 a.m. The last couple of weeks, I failed to leave you some good audio because I ended up eating before I started recording. So I figured in the spirit of stomach growl capturing, I should probably not
eat. And for everybody on the listening end of the show, that stomach growl, I'm hoping that I can edit out, because that one resonated all the way from my gut to the back of my throat. So that was just disgusting.
Oh, man. I don't know why you people listen to us, honestly. Just stop. Stop listening to our show. So really, there's not a whole lot left to say about Soul other than, you know, this was, I think in his case, he was basically tormented by an abusive upbringing, and then it created this disdain for women. And then he ended up on drugs, and it just manifested into this really massive execution of his thoughts on, you know, these poor women. And so ultimately, that's where I think we stand, is that it just manifested itself into something that he even says, like, this isn't him, in his testimony. This isn't the person that he is. And in a way, I believe him. However, he did, like, you know, rape his niece or whatever when he was like 11. So is it not him? Maybe truly at his core, it's not him, but because of the emotional abuse and stuff that he suffered, it is him. And I think he needs to come to terms with that is him. Like, that you don't just do, like, that is part of you as much as you don't want it to be. And I think that's more or less what he's saying. Like, I don't want to be this way. This isn't what my intention is. Just something else has happened.
The only thing I had to add to the, before we wrap up here, was I do remember when this case was in trial, and, you know, it was real hot news coverage. They did state that, you know, from the time of his arrest, and I don't know if it's the case today, you know, seven, eight, 9 years later, but I know when he was arrested originally, he was in very heavily protected custody while in prison or in jail, because there were a great number of the victims' family members that were in jail with him as well. And, you know, they were afraid that they were just going to, take their prison justice and take him out, which I'm going to come right off and say I'm not opposed to. I'm not sure why they just don't let it happen. So I'm sure he's still in some kind of protective custody, but I, you know, that's too bad.
Yeah, I don't know where he stands now, but I did look it up to see if they had a date of execution for him. And I saw something was out there for, I think, 2021, but then it was, like, it said removed. I don't know how official this website was I was on, so I don't know where it stands at this point. But I was just curious, like, how much longer he had, and I didn't really find anything. Well, that's it for our show this week. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And thank you for sharing our podcast with your friends, coworkers, family, people who enjoy sick and twisted tales of murder and who can be vegan and not harass us about it while listening about people getting murdered. Anyway, if you enjoyed us and if you want to help us out at all, you can head to our website, www.killerpod.net. Check out the show. Check out the blog when I do update it. You can also click the support button on that page and donate to the show, or you can head up our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/killerpodcast.
And you can also follow us on all the normal social media sites. You can reach us at Twitter @killer_podcast, Instagram @killerpodcast, Facebook is facebook.com/killerpodcast, or if you simply want to shoot us an email, send that to killerpodcast@gmail.com.
And I would also like to remind everybody, go take your IQ test, IQtest.com, and get your results in your email. Could be in your spam folder. You should probably check that if you're smart. And send us a screenshot of your results. We'd like to see it. So hit us up on Instagram or Twitter. Stay safe.